Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome again to Evident Footprints on BBS Radio. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this June the 14th on the West Coast, now June the 15th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd also like to welcome again those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network, and we know you're going to find tonight's show very interesting and informative. Well, those of you who have been listening in heard the show start over again. That's because we had a little technical snafu here. Hopefully we've overcome it. Seems like whenever Microsoft touches something, it develops Windows problems. Even those of us who don't use Windows. I'm speaking about the purchase of Skype by Microsoft and Mr. Bill Gates. If that story is true, then no wonder we are having the problems we've been having for the past couple of weeks. Anyway, before I go on, I think I'm going to brighten up the topic a little bit tonight. We're going to be talking about some earthly anomalies, and before we do that, I think it's appropriate to hear what the tubes have to say about the wild women of Wongo. And so on and on.
Yeah. this.
The Tubes, Wild Women of Wango. Is that primitive enough for you this evening? Why did I pick that song? Well, we're going to go into a topic that kind of has that vibe to it in a way. Tonight's guests do a lot of research in this area, not speaking about the Wild Women of Wango so much as I am about earthly anomalies. Underground bases, underwater bases, lost civilizations, and where we may have found one. And so I bring on board again this week my guest from last Thursday night, the webmaster and editor at educate-yourself.org, Mr. Ken Adachi, and essayist Zora Nova Star Livingstone. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Don.
Well, nice to have you there. Now, ZS, you sound like you're a little bit in the background. Make sure your mic is not muted.
How's that?
No, it's still...
Oh, no.
Still doing what it did a couple of weeks ago. We had that problem fixed last week, so check it out.
How's that?
That's much better.
You did it.
Get close to it now.
Okay.
All right. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks, Doc.
All right. We've been talking about a lot of different things, some political issues, some anomalous events that have occurred around the planet. And I have been continuing my research in regard to looking for some strange places that for a number of years I've had a feeling were right under our noses, actually. And spent a little bit of time on Google Earth yesterday and went directly to a place that I thought was the location, one of the central locations or the major cities of what is referred to historically as the mythical continent of Atlantis, and B, the lost continent of Atlantis. Now, Plato had written about Atlantis, and in fact, they termed his writings as mythology. Yet, there's a particular area in the Atlantic Ocean that shows it's much more than a myth. In fact, there's a tremendous amount of obfuscation going on in terms of the satellite imagery that reveals what's on the bottom of the ocean. And this is throughout the Earth. This isn't just in the Atlantic Ocean. But after making a discovery and then coming upon a term, actually identifying several seamounts at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean, I did some research. I recalled that Edgar Cayce had said some things about Atlantis, and although I was familiar with some of the things he said, there, for whatever reason, I wasn't privy to exactly where the location was. But I went to the Association of Research and Enlightenment website and read up a little bit about what he said. He said that it stretched from western end of Cuba in the Gulf of Mexico across the Atlantic Ocean at an angle toward Gibraltar. In fact, it ended at Gibraltar. And I found two particular areas that are very anomalous. I sent you gentlemen some pictures of that. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at them, but I wanted to discuss these anomalies that I found and see what your information is. Either one of you want to jump in and talk about Atlantis as far as what you know? And I know I'm putting you on the spot. You didn't have a chance to prepare for this. But...
Well, I would normally start out with my comments first, but I'm going to reverse this week and allow ZS to go to town. I have my own thoughts I can express, but I think this is very this is ideal territory for comments from ZS. So let's start with ZS tonight.
ZS, there's your cue.
That's my cue. Last September, I talked to Graham Hancock. He was here in Salmon Arm.
Mike, a little closer, please.
I talked to Graham Hancock about that subject. He was here in Salmon Arm, British Columbia, last September. And he has the Atlantis all around the world. And I asked him, why don't you just, have you checked out Atlantis where Plato had located past the Straits of Gibraltar in the area of the Azores and Madeira and the Canary Islands?
Yes.
He says he had actually tried diving off the Canary Islands and he couldn't, the currents around there was very hazardous and he nearly lost his life off the shore of Northern Africa there. But he's then went on to say that he believes that Atlantis was a worldwide civilization, and his research off the coast of India and off the southern coasts of Okinawa located all sorts of megalithic stone structures at 100 feet of water, which would be during a time which would have been above ground or above water, above sea level. About 8 to 10,000 years ago, when the last ice age was at its ending, and North America was under miles of ice, and but I still feel that having read Edgar Cayce, and Edgar Cayce said a lot about Bimini and the Bahamas,
mm-hmm.
And I've also seen references to megalithic structures in the Azores, it's one of those things that is still stuck in Portuguese and has not been translated into English. And I mentioned that to him, and he actually knows Portuguese, but he hasn't seen those reports about the Azores. And it was an interesting conversation.
Okay.
But I wasn't able to download your file. We're out in the boonies here, and anything over 5 megs doesn't come through. I had to delete it from the web mail. When you send smoke signals over 5 megs, they tend to get stuck in the air. another Microsoft problem there.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that there are two areas, the Azores. There's an area... and, of course, anyone can find this on Google Earth. There is an area southeast of Nova Scotia where there is a pattern of what appear, due to the artwork of Google Earth, to be cones. They are shaped with points on the end. They're not volcanic eruptions, but I think they're intended to make it look like maybe the molten rock was trying to burst through the ocean floor and it stopped with a cone. And these cones are similar in size. And the picture is a deep blue. But what you see when you capture the picture and then add some exposure to it, which brightens the whole picture so you can see the detail, what you see on the tips, first of all, in the darker version, are what appear to be lights. Now, there were some descriptions from some people who had gone on some expeditions to look at a couple of areas. The second area I'm going to talk about in a minute, but I'm referring first now to this area southeast of Nova Scotia. And all the tips of these cones are white in the photograph. Now, when you could hit auto level, which will immediately adjust the exposure and cast more light on the ocean floor, suddenly you see the outline of tetrahedrons. You see pyramids underneath these cones. The cones appear all to be airbrushed, as do many of the what appear to be buildings and very high walls. And the pyramids are laid out in a way that they look similar to a scorpion. I spent a lot of time looking at it, deciding what it represented, and I changed the focal point of the image by zooming in and zooming out until I got it to where it appeared to be some kind of a creature. At first, I thought I might see something that looked like a dragon, but I'd have to say it was closer to a scorpion. Nonetheless, when I hit the auto level button on my picture viewer, it brightened the photo, and you could see distinct lines that made triangles underneath the masked, airbrushed version depicting a cone. I thought you both would find that to be interesting. Now, the other location is closer, let's say, southwest of Spain, moving in a direct line, Africa, over to the Rock of Gibraltar, that general area. And I've actually been on the Mediterranean in that area, so I'm very familiar with it. And I have to tell you, that's one of the most turbulent trips I've ever made on an ocean-faring vessel. We had force 7 winds and waves. The ship I was on was lulling back and forth, tipping over almost as if it was going to capsize. Too bad back then I didn't know Hank Johnson, or I would have maybe held on to him for fear that it was going to tip over and capsize, as he said about Guam. Anyway, it is a very...
I just caught that.
It can be very scary, even on a ship, so you can imagine swimming that it would be a bit dangerous. Now, the water at that depth has been described as deep as 10,000 feet, maybe even more. And there have been several salvage expeditions where they have brought up artifacts which can only be attributed to Atlantis. We're talking about pyramids, tiny crystal pyramids. They witnessed pyramids that have crystals at the apex, and that when they took these artifacts out of the water and took them into laboratories and applied light and did different experiments, they noticed that these were amplifying the energy that went into them, which I know is a fact about pyramids. They act as amplifiers, and they produce a lot of ore energy, life force. They preserve things. So it's a rather interesting discovery I made. Now, I also got confirmation that area had been looked at and had been determined to be the likely location of Atlantis. So, Ken, do you want to comment on this at all, besides yeah. Hank Johnson joke?
Yes, I had a little delayed reaction there, but it was good. Somebody needed to laugh there. It was okay. Yeah, allow me to just back up a bit.
Okay. So, but stay with the listener. Don't push your mic away.
Yeah, the listener can appreciate what you're presenting here. So I'll just clarify the scenario of what you're referring to. This was unknown to me prior to you telling me about this, but you had found out there's a computer program called Google Earth, in which, of course, many people confident with a computer are well aware of this, but some people might not be. So there's a program called Google Earth, which allows you to get a satellite view of any location on the Earth, and you can get a faraway view or zoom in and get a closer view. And what I didn't know is I just presumed over bodies of water, oceans, etc., that the only view you would see is the top surface of the ocean. But you had told me, and I simply did not know, that the satellite imagery can actually penetrate through the water and record the appearance of the sea floor itself. That was news to me. I had no idea that was possible, considering the depths involved. You know, one just presumed that's... Okay, so anyway, what you're talking about here is Google Earth satellite images of the floor of the oceans. And what you're, what you've discovered by increasing the contrast of the shots so that you allowed more light. In other words, the original shots that you viewed were quite dark. But by running it through a filter, that you were able to add more light. And in so doing, you were able to more clearly perceive structures, you know, not random structures of nature, but rather structures that could only have been built by an intelligence. And one of the more common things in the four photos that you sent me is you see what look like pyramidal structures. And they're pretty convincing looking, Don. I'm just simply amazed at these photos. I will put them up on my website, so anyone who's listening to this show will find the link under the show to the to these photos so that they can follow along with your explanation.
Mm-hmm. But, now, you haven't seen the ones with the auto level yet, so when you see those, you're going to see a lot more detail.
Okay, I'm sure, but just the four that you sent me are rather large shots. You're, for instance, unless you have a very wide monitor, you have to scroll from side to side. It's an enormous amount of detail. I'm going to upload them in their full sizes to allow people to see the details of the writing, et cetera, that's embedded. But this is really tremendous stuff here. Once Zietz gets a look at these shots, he's going to be amazed.
Yes. Now, let me comment on something here, and then I want to let you take over again. Okay. And you can see in some of the shots there, it says Atlantis Seamount. Now, why would someone name that area Atlantis Seamount, number one? Then to the southeast of there, not too distant from that, it says Plato Seamount. Now, why would someone name that Plato? We're Plato Seamount. We're talking about a myth, an alleged myth. But this gets even more interesting. I did some research on the names to see if I could determine when or how these names came about. And I came upon a posting on a website called techtree.com. And it said, "Lost city of Atlantis not found on Google Earth!" Exclamation point. Dated February 23rd, 2009 at 10:13 IST. Now, it says, "Buried treasure? No, this time it's a lost city which has found its way into Google Earth. A UK-based aeronautical engineer, Bernie Bamford, has claimed to the Sun that he had seen on Google Earth a grid of lines undersea off the coast of West Africa, about 600 miles west of the Canary Islands, a location which experts believe where Atlantis had sunk. The exact coordinates on Google Earth," and they give these coordinates, I'll just read the numbers off, okay? 31, 15, 15.53 north, and 24, 15, 30.53 west, where he claims to have found the sunken city of Atlantis. Now, what's interesting, if you look at the coordinates on the photographs that I sent you, those are screenshots from Google Earth, you will see that those coordinates are nowhere near the coordinates published in this little debunking piece. But I found it rather interesting to go on here, and I'm going to share the next part of this little thing, because they're now making an attempt to debunk what Mr. Bamford claims he saw. Atlantis, a mythical island which Plato had described sinking into the ocean in a single day and night of misfortune around 9000 BC. But Google is officially denying the rumors, saying that the lines represented sonar data collected from boats. According to a Google statement, it's true that many amazing discoveries have been made in Google Earth, including a pristine forest in Mozambique. By the way, that's changed the subject. That is home to previously unknown species and the remains of an ancient Roman villa. Yes, that has a lot to do with Atlantis. In this case, however, what users are seeing is an artifact of the data collection process. Bathymetric or sea floor terrain data is often collected from boats using sonar to take measurements of the sea floor. But debate rages on. Is it or is it not the lost city of Atlantis? Now, this is a total debunking story. Here we have the Oracle, V'ger from one of the Star Wars series. This computer entity, this computer consciousness called Google now is telling us that what we found, what I found on the bottom of the ocean, or what Mr. Bamford has found, is not Atlantis. Yet when I went down and got to a certain depth, suddenly the word Atlantis Seamount appeared. Now, was that a ship that put that there? Was that NASA that put that there? Was that the Navy Department that put that there? Well, you can see the names at the bottom of a bottom center portion, all the credits and the altitude and the eye altitude. Interesting thing is that I can go look at the bottom of the ocean, but regardless of how deep I go, the eye altitude stops at 26 feet for some crazy reason. Somebody decided that was going to be the limit that you could look at something. Now, if you can see down to 10,000 feet, 26 feet is not that great of a distance that you're losing. But I find it interesting that that's how it stops. Now, who put the words in there? Who titled these areas as such? And you can see there is a huge space with a very high wall, which appears to be an amphitheater that has sunk into the ground, or the walls collapsed, leaving this rectangular depression in this area. It's too perfect to have been sonar scrape marks from boats going overhead. It's ridiculous. You might as well look for crash dummies and swamp gas while you're down there. That's the typical debunking methods that they use. But I found this article that I just read to you after I had discovered this on the bottom of the ocean. It's compelling. Now, there are some rather large artifacts there that look like they could be stone steps on top of a mountain that had collapsed when everything became submerged. Sort of a ritual area, possibly an area where sacrifices were made, or maybe a landing pad for spacecraft. It's extremely large. If you look, you can see that, Ken.
It's compelling.
So any comments?
I'll say a few words and I'll let Zias comment as well. I would like to...
Now, I hear speakers in the background. So, gentlemen, make sure your speakers are off. It sounds like it might be Zias.
Yeah, my wife just brought in her laptop, and I was just looking at the picture of the Google Earth. But she hadn't turned off the sound. Now she's turned the sound off.
All right. Okay, very good. So now you're getting a chance to look at it. That's great.
Yes.
Okay, Ken, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to amplify what you said about what we're always subjected to in this day and age is a continuous effort to obscure the truth from the public. And you have legions of individuals who are assigned the task of engaging in this obscuring of information or hiding or changing or otherwise making it appear to be whatever the script they put together wants it to appear as. So we see it in everything. We all know now that there is no such thing as news anymore. What you're getting from radio and television for the most part is propaganda. It's not news. It stopped being news a long time ago. We all know that. There's no one who doesn't know that today. And we all know that anytime the government tells us anything, they're lying. I mean, you can just take it to the bank. If the government is saying it, it's definitely a lie. And the other area where we're getting this covering of the tracks is with Google Earth. When this program was first made available to the internet, those who were enterprising enough to look in the right places discovered amazing things, because it takes these guys time to even discover themselves what needs to be erased or covered up or otherwise obscured from view. So you discovered a number of things. For instance, when we talked about Google Earth Adventures a couple years ago, let's say, that can no longer be seen. They've since been obscured so that what you had captured back then cannot be captured today. But thankfully, you saved all those shots so we can present the information anyway. So there are areas where there are, secret bases, etc., that the government doesn't want the public to know about. So they obscure it. They'll put clouds there. If it's in a area that normally has a lot of greenery, then they'll just cover it all up with greenery. In the case of this shot, seafloor bottom, you have some technician working probably, with government people who are overseeing this process. I'm just guessing, but I presume people from the Pentagon, et cetera, are right there working with the people who create these Google Earth images and do the writing, et cetera, that we see on the image there, who are overseeing the fudging of detail. So I just wanted to emphasize what you've already said, but just make it clear so that people, everyone understands you're not getting the truth even from Google Earth. It'll be, in some cases, things that they don't want you to see, it'll be entirely obscured. In some cases, they just put a black mask over the area they don't want you to see. They don't even try to pretend it's cloud cover or, excuse me, not cloud. You don't normally see cloud cover. They don't try to pretend it's vegetation or make it look like a sandy area, a desert scape or something. They'll just put a black mask over the whole thing. They won't explain it. There won't be a word of explanation. So anyway, you've done an excellent job here, though.
Yeah, there were two things that I'd like to point out, and this is proof that they obfuscate the photos. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at regular Google Earth pictures, land, and you go to a city and you locate some buildings, you'll see parked cars. Occasionally, you'll see a car on a city street, maybe one car. And you go to the freeways of Los Angeles or Chicago or New York or Washington, D.C., the Beltway, and you see no cars on the freeways. Where How were they able to take these shots, these daylight shots of cities around the world and little towns and rural areas, and not capture any pictures of moving traffic? Trains, airplanes. Yeah, certainly an airplane would get in the way somewhere. But carefully, all of these things are filtered out, including images of people. You would think you were visiting a deserted planet, looking at Google Earth images of what's going on any time around the planet. And you see the same thing with the ocean. There's no plant life anywhere. There were no whales. There were no sharks. There are no dolphins. There are no sea critters whatsoever. How is it that they can present these images, which, they're going to say, well, it's not their policy to photograph animals. How can you take a satellite photograph or accumulated numbers, maybe millions of satellite photographs that are edited together and not capture any of these things? And when they don't want you to see something, they take a black box and put that in its place. Why do they do these things? Well, we've talked about it. You just disclosed it. And people have described seeing roads or tunnels in the bottom of the ocean, and these pictures show them as well, that since these discoveries have been made, there have been fresh tracks put in the bottom of the ocean, disclosing all. ZS, do you want to comment on what I just said? If you're still with us, that is, ZS?
Yeah, I just changed microphones. How's this? Oh,
okay, yes, that's good.
All okay, right. I don't know how they would... I can imagine the lawyers would not want want pictures of people on Google Earth because they might get lawsuits. unauthorized photographs, and there could be privacy issues regarding license plate numbers. Of course, that's a story from the spy satellites were able to take license plate numbers and actual live motion at shots of people at ground level.
Yes.
And so looking at that grid on the bottom of the floor off the coast of Africa, 10,000 feet deep, a question which I asked Graham Hancock is, can't he imagine the ocean subsiding 10,000 feet or more than 10,000 feet if that grid was, say, 1,000 or 2,000 feet above sea level and it goes down? That's a huge, huge structure there on the bottom of the ocean. And it's also, looking at it, looking at the whole ocean, there are structures that have Atlantis-like characteristics. Iceland. Iceland is where the the Mid-Atlantic Ridge is thousands of feet above sea level.
Mm-hmm.
It's a representation of the structure which was Atlantis, or maybe the last remnant of Atlantis from 10,000 years earlier. And it is a very volcanic structure and very unstable, and it's just being propped up by dynamic tension between Greenland and Europe. There's some under the crust structure that's pushed it up, and I can imagine in the over the ages of the Earth that other structures, large continent-like structures, were the Mid-Atlantic or Mid-Pacific or Mid-Indian Ocean ridges that got popped up, especially when you consider the expanding Earth theory of the planet, and that as the Earth has increased in girth over the last 70, 80 million years, that there have been many, many structures pushing. In all odd angles. Also, the grid is about 10 degrees off true north, east, and west. And that's probably an indication of what the actual shift was with the collapse of the Mid-Atlantic Ridge and the huge mile-high tsunamis, which would have circled the globe, the biblical flood or the destruction of Atlantis mentioned by Plato. So mm-hmm. right there in that one picture, you can see the destruction that, or the forces that were involved with the collapse of that that continent, or that subsidence in one day.
Yes. Now, the ancient writings, the esoteric writings that described a war between Atlantis and Sumeria, are kind of interesting because Atlantis is alleged to have engaged Sumeria in a nuclear war of that time. Certainly, the technology was there. They were building lots of these pyramids. They were building huge, huge structures. And we're not really seeing all the images that are there. They've been conveniently masked out. I'm sending both of you gentlemen a photograph of the Western version that I described near or off the to the southeast of Nova Scotia. And it's a auto-level picture that's going to show you a lot more detail. When you look at the cones, you'll be able to discern the triangular shapes of the light underneath the cones. And it could imply that those were even crystal pyramids, that they weren't necessarily made of stone, and that they couldn't totally reduce the glare, or they chose not to reduce the glare at the tip. But that certainly they have more photographs than what they're showing us. You see, when you're looking at Google Earth, folks, you're looking at pictures. They've taken pictures, and you have the ability to zoom in to the picture. So it's a program that allows you to zoom in like any graphic viewer will allow you to do. And it's the photographe du jour that you're looking at. It happens in 2006 or 2007. The images that they had posted there are what you would see. In 2008, if they made any updates, or 2009, you might see in some areas updates, even though all the photographs have the current copyright for how, you know, in a sense they're claiming a copyright, yet it's an adjustable copyright. You know, you can look at it from a pinpoint, or you can look at it from a magnified version. And what you see in each case is a different representation of the same photo. So they're basically saying that they've copywritten a virtual reality, which is kind of crazy. But nonetheless, I mean, we're not trying to make money off of this or anything like that. This is public information. It's available on the internet, and you can see it. But they're taking the credit for the photographs or some aspect. Now, I've never seen any mention to boats, other than to try to debunk the pathways that are evident, tunnels, or roads that it looks like they went down there with some very heavy amphibious construction equipment to create that, or some technology that just cut it with laser light, for example, or a plasma beam. Kind of interesting. Ken, do you want to comment?
Yes. Yes, everything you're bringing up is extremely interesting. I'd like to amplify on a passing remark that ZS just made in his comments. He said that the girth of the Earth is increasing. I want to amplify on that. ZS put up an essay some weeks ago, I can't remember how long ago, perhaps 6, 7, 8 weeks ago, I think it's titled The Earth is Expanding, and it is a tremendously interesting essay to read. The essence of the article is this, is that the Earth is increasing in size. If you would imagine a balloon that has more air going into it, it would expand in all directions, right? It would become a larger balloon. And what Zias talks about in that essay is that based on the physical evidence of the appearance of the current continents, that the idea that makes the most sense, it's possible that he referred back to information by Walter Russell. I'm not sure he'll clarify, I'm sure, in a second, but that the Earth is expanding outwards. Now, this is another topic that seems impossible to accept by, let's say, the conventional mind, because of the schooling we have and because of what is considered, quote, common knowledge. We don't even consider these possibilities, but it was an excellent essay, and I encourage anyone to who's interested in what I'm talking about here to go to that essay. It's on the current news page. It's also on ZS's dedicated page as well. Did you want to add to that, ZS?
Well, back in 1971, when I was receiving the first part of the Alpha Omega or Melchizedek teachings, we were told that many things, what caused the Atlantis to shrink was, or to collapse, was where the Earth was actually scheduled to go into ascension to the fifth step of the fifth dimension, and that forces on the Earth and off the Earth prevented the ascension of the planet in order to keep control of the minerals and the life on the Earth. And in diverting or causing consciousness to stay at a low level, it was the whole mass consciousness of people on the planet being manipulated by mind control that prevented the ascension. And we see exactly the same thing happening at this time with all the mind control operations going on and the dumbing down and also people playing with their Johnsons and that sort of thing, going back to a reference you said earlier. And
the wild women of Wango, you mean?
Oh, yeah, yes, the wild women of Atlantis. And they're also
They're playing it with Hank Johnson.
Hank Johnson, yes. They're caught up in their Hank Johnsons and other apparatuses. But the consciousness was lower, and that short-circuited energy coming in to inflate the planet at the time dimensionally. But got slammed, and there's a whole shift in the toppling of the planet due to interdimensional energy flux. And so... I'm trying to collect my thoughts here. I have lots of thoughts. And
well, just give us one for right now, and then we'll move to the second one. Just kidding. Just kidding.
Okay. But the period of time in which the planet has been expanding is actually about the last 70 or 80 million years. I mentioned in an earlier show that we have example of what happened about 70 million years ago just in our backyard in Banff in British Columbia here, Banff, Alberta border, where there's a huge overthrust of the Rocky Mountains. That section of the Rocky Mountains was created 70 million years ago. And at one point, the land scrunched together like a carpet. You're forcing a carpet together. The crust went up 30 miles and came down, curled, and stuck in that position ever since. And the water and the ice over the last 70 million years has eroded, creating the mountains' appearance as they are now. But if you count through the layers of the ground there, you'll see the overthrust. You count up, you count down, you count up, you count down on these stacks of laminate or the layers of the sedimentary rocks, mm-hmm. metamorphosized rocks at a 45-degree angle in all sorts of different directions. And so what kind of forces would have taken 70 million years ago at the start of the expansion of the Earth to cause that much to thrust huge layers of the crust 30 miles into the air and then topple them over? So there's huge energies involved with the planet and with also consciousness that is holding the planet. And mm-hmm. You really, really have to start expanding your thinking outside the box to see what kind of energies that was. And of course, that picture of a land or of the grid pattern on the bottom, however it was carved at 10,000 feet deep, indicates a lot of energy being misplaced or displaced 8 to 10,000 years ago.
Yes. Now, I want to draw your attention, gentlemen, to the last two photos, which are the eastern portion off the edge of the Canary Islands. And if you look at the last or the second of those two, you'll see a close-up of the Atlantis seamount area. And there is a pattern to this. The best way I can describe it is it resembles the Pillsbury Doughboy lying on the ground, arms spread out, legs spread out, and a head turned to its left, lying on its side. And you can see eyes and a nose and a mouth on this head, as if this was some big sacrificial statue. Gigantic. I mean, it's lying on the bottom of the ocean, and we don't really have a perspective of how large this is. But if you look in the Johnson area of that, you can see these stone steps that are going up there, higher up. And then there appear to be several pyramids all over this. One is on what I would call the left arm area. It's a lighter area in color, and as if it's got white light embedded in it, and it's amazing the detail that is there. When I first looked at it, one begins to look at the different components, and then when I adjusted it, the zoom of the image, I realized it looks like a human body. Now, I'm not saying it is a human body. This is some kind of monument, gigantic monument that was there. But it's interesting that where the head would be is a head. And it's got what appear to be big black eyes. That could have been a landing spot for craft coming down from space, making a routine visits and landing in there. That might be a whole building in the shape of a human body of the time. Now, is that ridiculous? We have the Sphinx in Egypt and other such artifacts scattered about the globe. So it wouldn't be crazy to see something like this.
And on Mars, too.
And on Mars also, yes, absolutely. So this is something that star travelers involve themselves in. You can see on the third photograph, which is the zoomed out version of the last photo I was just referring to, it's sort of on the left, upper left corner section of the photograph. And you can see that it looks like a representation of a humanoid type of body, although the head, looking at it with the size of the eyes, looks like a gray. Can you see that detail in the?
Yes, I'm really amazed at what you got here, Don. It's fascinating. I wish I had been able to study these more before the show, but I'll be putting them on my website, so anyone listening to this recording will be able to see them. This is really amazing, and as you say, the detail is far more. It's far greater than I imagined it would be. It's simply amazing what you are talking about here and what you stumbled upon. I'm going to do some captures myself and play with these photos in Photoshop to see if I can increase magnification and contrast even more.
Mm-hmm. I didn't really spend much time on it. You know, I touched one button.
This is a tremendous find, Don. This is really extraordinary stuff. And as you say, I do concur with your impressions. It does not strike me as all unusual to have these large, very large structures of what might look like humanoid figures or animal figures, in just in tremendous size, as Z has pointed out. They're plainly seen on Mars. It was part of these ancient extraterrestrial cultures to either honor something or somebody. And because they had the technology to make these huge structures without using, 10,000, slaves, as are depicted in the movies, of using just manual labor, they had the anti-gravity technology that allowed them to build these huge structures. This doesn't surprise me at all. This is it's amazing though what you're pointing out here, and the fact that anyone can access these via Google Earth is equally thrilling.
And the coordinates are different from what I read.
Yes. Getting back to that whole notion of obfuscation, what else is new? I wanted to perhaps touch on a couple points here. One is the whole area of what are called myths in our history books, in our school books, etc. In almost all cases, what is referred to as an ancient myth was, in fact, probably a reality. Usually a fantasy doesn't survive many millennia. It just doesn't happen. I think in the books of Sitchin, for instance, because he examines the Sumerian culture so carefully, that what are called these, like the Greek gods of myth, were in fact real individuals. They were of this so-called demigod group who were part human and part alien. And because the alien race that is responsible for mixing the seed were physically very tall individuals, typically 12 to 15 feet tall, naturally a human hybrid of that is going to be more than 5 feet 10. It's going to be a larger person. So, typically, what we're told are myths are in almost all cases realities that did exist at one time, and that what the writer was chronicling in these Sumerian epics, in ancient Greek lore, etc., were real events and real people. One good example I pointed out before, but I'm sort of a buff of ancient history. I find it really an enjoyable topic to read about, is the discovery of the ancient city of Troy in the late 19th century by Heinrich Schliemann. And prior to that, in all school books, you name it, wherever the subject came up of the Trojan Wars, it was described as a myth, as an epic, in other words, a work of fiction. But it was a real place, and it was described real battles that took place approximately, I think, 1250 BC. That's about right. When it it happened, and it was described, in Plato, I believe, referred to it, 500 BC or so, as these events actually taking place. And yet all our modern universities, just about everywhere in the world, will poo-poo these ideas until the place is actually discovered. Then suddenly, oh, yes, my God, there is a real place known as Troy. And there was a genuine Trojan War. And while we're on the subject, though, just the person who actually discovered the location of where the site of Troy was a man who worked for the American Embassy. This is in the 19th century in Turkey. Asia Minor is the area is referred to. And I think his name is Frank Evans. I'm reaching back in memory, but I think his name is Frank Evans. He worked at the local American Embassy, and Schliemann made a lot of money in gold in the 1849 California Gold Rush. So he was wealthy, and he embarked on these adventures in Europe. And when he went there, he was inquiring about the myth. And Frank took him to this hill. It's called Hisarlik. And he said, dig here. This is where it is. And, history doesn't record a word about Frank Evans. It's, of course, Schliemann, put all the wreaths of fame upon himself and totally forgot about the guy who told him where to dig. So I think we always find that to be the case. Recently, in the last few months, ZS and I and you, we talked about the events in Japan. I put up an essay the next day after the Japan earthquake, which occurred on March 11th, and I wrote up that this is a sabotage operation. And ZS, of course, I was talking to him from the 11th forward about this, so it wasn't just my notion. But ZS put up a essay just 2 days later, on March 14th, in which he said, the explosions at Fukushima were not due to hydrogen gas, but rather were due to nuclear devices. In late May, we had a guy named Jim Stone who put together a really nice article. It's on my website, in which he found additional proof that the Japan quake was not only a false flag event, but the government, the U.S. Geological Survey, et cetera, had fudged the numbers as to the magnitude, and they also changed the epicenter. And he pointed out that, the very things we talked about on March 12 and 14, he essentially embraced the same story we came out with. And then there was just today, I put up a new piece. This blogger, Dutch Sins, who I've mentioned before, does a really good job in spotting the scalar echoes on radar maps as to the weather manipulation that's taking place all over North America every single day of the week. He too now, independently on his own, a guy named Tony sent me an email today, and I posted it, in which he's saying Fukushima was a scam. Well, I want to remind folks that you could have read that here on March 12 and March 14th. And this guy also points out that websites like Jeff Rentz, who I like and respect, because he does good things, I think, for the world, totally embrace the psyops. We've been calling it a psyops from the very beginning, from March 12 forward. We've been calling the radiation deal a psyops, and I have at least 14 or 15 or 16 articles posted between March 12 and, June 14 today, in that space in which we repeatedly stuck to the story that the events in Japan were sabotage, all of the events in Japan were acts of sabotage, and that there was no radiation winter, nuclear winter, enveloping the whole world, as most of the people who are posting to Rents, Yoshio Shimatsu, Arnie Gunderson, Christopher Busby, Lauren Moray, etc. All these people are trumpeting the radiation, the sky is falling, radiation scare story. There's no truth to it. And thankfully, Dutch Sintz, totally on his own, did some radiation reading checkings around the country. And guess what? There's no elevation in radiation. So I wanted to remind folks that between the fabulous discoveries that you come up with and the amazing insights that ZS has routinely produced, we're hitting a lot of balls out of the park here. And I'm elated about it, and I wish a few more people who are coming up to speed on the story might mention the fact that we had the story out early on. But I welcome the additional ventilation of the facts, because it's a little tiring to be the lone voice mm-hmm. here without anyone else realizing what's plainly apparent. As you've stumbled upon these photos, it's obvious these are structures made by intelligent beings. You cannot get what looks like a perfect rectangular on the bottom of the seafloor. It just can't happen by nature. Mm-hmm. And these pyramid shapes are very sharp. There's no question there's multiple pyramid shapes here. So I just wanted to add.
Yeah, I'm sending you another one, which is auto-leveled of the Eastern version, okay? And I want to reiterate, as I zoomed in, I had no idea what I was going to see on the bottom. I had picked the spot and went down and just kept zooming in, zooming in, zooming in, and suddenly words appeared, which I didn't even expect.
Wow.
Confirming it. There would be no reason for anyone to put that in the photograph unless that's what it was. And, we just gave it a nickname. mm-hmm. You can imagine the spin that you'll get. ZS, any comment?
Talk about revealing there's some tech in or somebody at Google Earth who disobeyed orders of obscuring detail on the bottom of obfuscation. Putting the names on these sea mountains and allowing your search to go to the sea bottom and see the detail. So thanks to mm-hmm. somebody at Google, the truth is getting out, because he probably disobeyed orders.
Yes.
And
It's possible. Then again, they think the sheeple are too dumb to figure out what they're seeing or even figure out how the program works.
Right.
I didn't invent it. I just used it. You know, it's got a zoom button. I zoomed. I zoomed until it went down to 26 feet. You know, I thought that was kind of strange. Why stop at 26 feet? You know.
Yeah.
Don, can I just amplify one of the points?
The fact just... Sure.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Finish your thought, and then I'll just add one quick.
Said everything that I was going to say. So
okay, just wanted to amplify what you just said, and because I heard ZS mention it too. The dumbing down of the world's population in general is an important factor here that I'd like to just comment on. You can't blame people for not knowing something. That's not fair. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, though, once it's brought to your attention that you are being deceived, and once it's pointed out that the only way you're going to discover the truth, you must think independently, not depend on what you're told by others. In this email from Tony that I put up on my site tonight, he had mentioned that bloggers and who were dumbfounded by Dutch Sintz's realization that the Fukushima thing was a scam and it was a radiation scare psyops. They had commented, "Well, no, it's real, because just read Rents, and it's the reference to other writers, other presenters." That is not proof of anything. At least it shouldn't be proof to you, the individual. Mm-hmm. If you're a thinking individual, if you want to try to take back your power, as it were, as Bob Beck often said in his lectures, you must think independently and do your own analysis and think it through yourself. Don't accept Lauren Morey's analysis, or that's probably not even the correct term. Don't accept her postulates, her explanations as being valid or sound or true. Don't accept that. Of course, you can listen to it and weigh it, but do your own thinking. If what any of these scaremongering PSYOP individuals, if anything we're saying were true, there ought to be corroborating evidence to support their thesis. The fact of the matter is, it's not there. I've said from the beginning, as Zias has said, and another person who has been very helpful in, let's say, reading the situation on a psychic level, is that there have been seeding of radioactive iodine, for example, into chemtrails in order to cause an elevation in readings on the West Coast or throughout America even, following the Fukushima event. Why? They want to be able to report it in the media so that you're assuming there's this cloud of radiation drifting over from Japan. That's mm-hmm. not what happened at all. They simply mm-hmm. seeded some radioactive iodine. Same with the water contamination that they were reporting in Japan, in Tokyo, for instance. There was isolated incidents in just a few of water supplies having an elevation of radioactive iodine, maybe another metal, I can't remember, maybe cobalt or something. Again, it's sabotage. It's being added to the water supply so they can therefore report this elevation, and the unthinking person who's accepting, you know, the mainstream cover story would say, oh, yes, well, I read that the elevated, oh, yes, in University so-and-so found elevated report. Oh, yes, and yeah, you see.
Go watch this video. Watch this video. This is convincing, you see. Right. That's the whole thing. Put it in a movie, and everybody right. eats it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and a midnight snack. And then the fear is regenerated the next
right.
day.
Right. So that's what I've done in my essays is I went to DADA. I went to radiation reporting sites in the USA, in Japan, for an example, and I looked at the actual data. I looked at all the data before March 11th. I looked at a few weeks before, and then I looked at the data after. And there was these minor, very minor background radiation elevations, really just for one day in Tokyo. Following the March 11th event, only the 15th of March, you had a minor elevation one station in Tokyo at the Shinjuku station, and it wasn't all day long. It was just one reading that was, you know, elevated beyond the background radiation was 0.04 micrograys or microsieverts on average. And in this one reading, it rose to 0.08. That was the biggest elevation in background reading in Tokyo since this event started, right up to today. And yet, if you listen to propagandists like Murray or Busby or Arnie Gundersen, you Weber. Think the whole world was being enveloped in this huge radiation nightmare. Mm-hmm. And the only way you can find out that their themes are error-filled is you have to check yourself. You need to study the data yourself and don't accept the conclusions presented by others.
Yes. That's... Now, ZS and I and Jim Murray actually did a show, if you remember, a couple of weeks ago or so. Maybe it was 3 weeks ago, ZS?
Yes.
Yeah, it was May 13th.
Okay. Well, that's more than 3 weeks ago. A good month ago then.
Yeah, then that's when you did the show.
Yeah, we did a show where I mentioned an underwater base, and I've got pictures of the underwater base there off the – actually, it's the southern tip of Japan. There's a strait that moves through there, and that's the general area to the east, several hundred miles. Now, I've got pictures, and there are even – 3D graphics of what's on the bottom there. And it's clearly an alien underwater base. It's what it is. I'm not making this up. I'm not trying to scare anyone. I've been describing the accounts of what I see going on in space. And there are others who have alluded to this. Now, are these people listening to this show and then going on blog sites writing this? There are some people who are aware of this. You can see it at night with night vision goggles on a clear night with no chemtrails in the sky. You can see this. And in some parts of the country, especially in the desert, where there are no artificial lights to impede your view of the night sky, you can even see this. Some of them actually enter the atmosphere. It's not just all happening out in space. These crafts have been viewed going into these underwater bases, and I've discovered quite a number of them. They're all over the place.
Lake Erie?
Lake Erie's got one, yes. There's a young man several months ago, maybe as much as 6 months ago, late December or early January, filmed this, and they brought it on the mainstream TV news, Fox News, out of Cleveland. Then they had the obligatory debunker. They went into the ghetto and got a young black girl to say, oh, well, I think he's just making all this up. And that's supposed to debunk the story. It's so ridiculous that they pick somebody. I'm not saying this because the girl's black. That's not the point I'm making. They're obviously giving you a totally different perspective on this. In other words, this girl probably has never seen anything in the sky, even a chemtrail or an airplane, and she's already judging the video that this guy has that shows craft flying there. We've seen these craft fly all over the place, and Lake Erie is not the only place on the planet where people have seen this. They've been seeing these phenomena for decades in Mexico City, and multiple videos have been made. Well, we know that there are many underwater bases off the coast of Mexico in the Pacific Ocean as well. So the point I'm making is, when I say that I know that there's an underwater base off the coast of Japan, and it very likely may have had something to do with something that went on March 11th, that's a possibility. Do I know that for certainty? No. But I do know there's an underwater base there. That's significant. There are also people claiming that, there are spaceships or there are satellites shooting beams at the containment plant at the nuclear facility there at Fukushima, and that caused the explosion. That's not what we said. I don't know who's saying that. But you see, we said there was evidence. Jim Murray even said, the people in Japan said they didn't know who did this, that there was an Israeli security company that had the contract for that. So, gentlemen, we're out of time, but I want to give you each 1 minute to make a closing statement.
Well, okay, thank you, Don. Pleasure to be on with you again. I will be putting up the photos that you had talked about tonight, and I'm sure it will stimulate a lot of conversation. We try to present information in these talks which are useful and helpful to people to realize that much of what mainstream does, and even many so-called alternative media websites do, is to report information in a way that ultimately causes people to become depressed and fear-ridden and anxiety-ridden about the future. We create our day-to-day reality based on how we think and, in turn, how we act. Thoughts create reality. I've written it many times. I'm certainly not the author of the idea. I'm just echoing a truth that I discovered some years ago, and that I hope more people come to realize is true. When you allow defeatist thoughts, defeatist ideas, defeatist themes, the New World Order is a slam dunk deal. I mean, I respect Jeff Rentz, but his pessimism is just stifling. The guy is convinced that it's all over but the crying. The end of the world is just around the corner, and it's just one doom and gloom article after another. And if that's what you process for your thoughts, if your emotions particularly are tied to that thinking, that's what you get. You get what you think. You get the reality that your thoughts process. When you see that you can change reality by changing your thoughts, you suddenly become much more upbeat and optimistic. And this isn't, you know, foolish optimism. This isn't pie-in-the-sky optimism. What I'm saying here is a reality. We create reality with the way we think. So I'll close with that point.
Okay, thank you. ZS, your closing remarks. I'm sparing you the music, by the way.
Okay. What I mentioned about the Psyche of Atlantis, also in that piece which I wrote for CanEducateYourself.org, regarding what's happening with the attempted to block any sort of expansion of consciousness on the planet through mind control, is that it's failing, and the frequency is rising. Even I've got a piece saying that in the last few years, the crime rate throughout the states and around the world has dropped 40%. It's not advertised on Fox TV. And, of course, anybody who's building prisons get as fast as they can wouldn't want those figures to be widely spread out. Of course, you watch news and you're just seeing the worst of the worst, and you're believing that it's crimes everywhere, and no, consciousness is increasing. The crime rate has dropped 40%. There's miracles happening in conscious awareness. People are opening up. It's very slow in many respects, but in the acceleration of consciousness, or the opening up of the higher senses, the planet is going through a transition in a smooth way.
Yes.
We will be able to do things in the next few years which we wouldn't be able to do in the last millennia. And it's coming very, very quickly.
Well, I'd say even in the past 13,000 years.
Yes.
As a collective group. I would chime in with my closing remark. I mentioned this on last night's show, and it bears repeating. And this information didn't come from NASA, and it didn't come from the EU Space Agency, nor any other space agency around the world. But it did come from space. There are determined to be at least 180 billion inhabited planets in our galaxy alone. 180 billion. Okay? That's a heck of a lot. And what was thought to be possibly 1 trillion planets has now been estimated to be somewhere from 2 to 3 trillion. Not all inhabited. So far, 180 billion planets have been determined to have intelligent life. Now, are they all very advanced because they're out there in space? Well, we're out in space. How advanced are we? We may have the technology, but spiritually, we are devoid of wisdom as a species, and certainly those running the planet, even with all the secrets that they have kept from us. They show enormous amounts of ignorance. You would think that they would share that, but their intention is to enslave humanity, enslave nature, and if in their demented thought processes, they think they can even restrain or enslave God. They will attempt to do that, and that this is certainly what it appears on the surface and down deep to be. And it doesn't matter if you're discovering this via Google Earth or Google Mars or Google Moon or any other program that's been developed. It's been created to show you certain things that they want you to see and hide the things they don't want you to see. And occasionally, they're not very good at covering it up. They underestimate the intelligence of those that look for these things. And three of us are on this show tonight bringing you the truth. Ken, I can't wait to see how you write this up. And I want to thank you both for being on the show. We do have to say goodnight, though. So I want to let the listening audience know that Ken Adachi and Zuranova Star Livingstone will be back on Evident Footprints next Thursday. That's the 23rd. So mark that down on your calendars. Be sure to tune into the show. Have no idea what we're going to talk about that night, but I'm sure it will be interesting. Gentlemen, I wish you a great night, and thank you for being on the show tonight.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
All right, folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our guests Ken Adachi and Zuranova Star Livingstone. You can read all their work at educate-yourself.org. And click on Current News. That's where you find all the juicy stuff right away. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting Evident Footprints. Over at BBS Radio tonight, we had the sound done by engineer Seth Hendrick, comedy by Seth Hendrick, also in the chat window. And I'd like to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night on Wellness Wednesday when my special guest will be Dr. Wayne Pickering. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.